a spaceship approaches the Enterprise. On the bridge, the red alert signals flash as the ship appears on the forward view screen. At the helm, the telescopic scanner rises up out of the console in front of Lieutenant Sulu. Scotty, who's changed his floppy side parting and fringe for a swept back style, gazes with professional interest at the slim, bullet-shaped vessel with its four tail fins in the shape of a cross. Spock peers into his scanners at the science station. Kirk crosses over to him.
Here's the bank standing by, sir.
Claims 43,000 and closing.
What do you read, Mr. Spock?
Configuration unidentified. Ion propulsion, high velocity, though of a unique technology.
Any contact, Lieutenant?
Failing on all frequencies, sir. All languages have been attempted. No response. Now using standard interstellar symbols.
Keep trying.
Aye, sir.
Magnification 10, Mr. Sigmund.
Aye, sir. 38,000 and closing.
Well, Scotty.
Me, but isn't she a beauty?
Interesting design.
I've never seen anything like her. And ion propulsion at that. Ah, they could teach us a thing or two.
Life forms, Mr. Spock?
One. Humanoid or similar, low level of activity. Life support systems functioning. Interior atmosphere, conventional nitrogen oxygen. Instruments indicate a transferal beam emanating from the area of the humanoid life form.
Directed at what?
Directed at the bridge of the Enterprise, Captain.
Security guard.
Security guard to the bridge.
In a glow of green light, a female humanoid materializes by the engineering panel. Dressed in a shiny purple mini dress with a plunging cutaway bodice and thigh-length boots with integral suspenders, she gives a warm smile to the astounded bridge crew.
I'm Captain James Kirk. This is the Starship Enterprise.
The security detail arrive. The woman touches a button on her wristband and the bridge crew collapse. She smiles. She presses the wristband again. On the lower decks, people drop where they stand. In sickbay, McCoy and Nurse Chapel slump to the floor. Still with a warm smile, the dark-haired woman crosses the bridge, looking at each of the crew sympathetically. She stops by the science station and gently puts her hand on Spock's head.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Spock's Brain, written by Lee Cronin, directed by Mark Daniels. On the darkened bridge of the Enterprise, the crew are slumped unconscious at their stations. The lights come back up and they immediately start to revive. Sulu looks round from his seat at the con.
What happened?
Helm status, Mr. Sulu.
No change from last meeting, sir.
Condition reports from all decks, Lieutenant.
Aye, sir.
Fark, where's Fark?
Jim! Jim!
Yes, what is it?
You better come down to sick bay.
All right, on my way.
Deck 5, personnel, no damage.
Spock lies on the diagnostic table in sickbay.
Now.
Functioning.
Nurse Chapel throws a switch on the panel, and the gauges on the biomonitor start to pick up.
My God.
Kirk and Scotty come in.
Spock, what happened?
I found him on the table.
Like this?
No, not like this.
What happened?
I don't know.
Spock's temple is swathed in a gold cloth.
You've got him on complete life support. Was he dead?
He was worse than dead.
What do you mean?
Jim.
Come on, Bones, what's the mystery?
His brain is gone. It's been removed surgically.
They all look at one another incredulously.
How could he survive?
It's the greatest technical job I've ever seen. Every nerve ending of the brain must have been neatly sealed. Nothing ripped, nothing torn, no bleeding. It's a medical miracle.
If his brain is missing, then Spock is dying.
No. An incredible Vulcan physique hung on to the life support cycle took over. His body lives, the autonomic functions continue. But there is no mind.
Kirk frowns as he tries to comprehend what McCoy is saying. He turns away, pacing the room.
That girl?
Aye.
What girl?
From that ship. She took it. I don't know why or where, but she must have taken it. Bones, how long can you keep him functioning?
I can't give you any guarantee.
That's not good enough, Doctor.
If it happened to any of us, I would say indefinitely. But Vulcan physiology limits what I can do. Spock's body is much more dependent upon that tremendous brain for life support.
Then we'll have to take him with us.
Take him where?
In search of his brain, Doctor. From what you say, the moment we find it, we must restore it to his body or we lose him.
Jim. Where are you going to look? In this whole galaxy? Where are you going to look for Spock's brain? How are you going to find it?
I'll find it.
Even if you do, I can't restore it. I don't have the medical technique.
It was taken out. It can be put back in.
But I don't know how.
The thief that took it has the knowledge.
I'll force it out of her. If you don't find it in 24 hours, you'd better forget the whole thing, Jim.
You and Scotty have Spock ready.
He goes.
I've got it again, sir. An ion trail. It's from that ship of theirs, all right.
Where does the trail lead, Mr. Jacob?
System Sigma Draconis.
Lock on, Mr. Sulu. Maximum speed? Warp 6.
Kirk walks from the con right up to the forward view screen.
No question about the trail?
No mistake, sir.
The view screen shows a starfield, but no trace of any vessel. Kirk's brown eyes glitter with impatience as he paces up and down in front of it.
Captain's log, stardate 5431.4. For 15 hours and 20 minutes, we have been following the ion trail of the spaceship that has Spock's brain. Time left to us, 8 hours and 40 minutes.
Captain, I've lost the trail.
All scanners, extreme sweep.
Aye, sir.
Kirk paces in front of the con.
Well?
Nothing, sir.
No signal at all, Captain.
It's gone, sir. A sudden deaction shift.
We've lost our trail. But you went into that system.
Mr. Chekhov, put a schematic of Sigma Draconis on the screen.
Aye, Captain.
Read out, Mr. Chekhov.
Sun spectral type, Gamma 9. 9 planets, 3 of them Class M. Possessing sapient life, according to reports and long-range scanning.
She was breathing our air. She must have gone to one of them.
Show us the 3 Class M planets, Mr. Chekhov.
Chekhov brings up a schematic of the 3 planets and steps up to the forward view screen.
The one on the left, number 3, rates letter B on the industrial scale.
Earth equivalent, approximately 1485.
Yes, sir. Second planet, class M, number 4, rates letter G.
Year 2030.
But that ship, Captain, either was many years ahead of us, or it was the most incredible design fluke in history.
Third class M planet, Mr. Chekhov.
Number 6. No sign of industrial development. At last report, in a glacial age. Sapient life, plentiful, but on a most primitive level.
Now, as I understand you, Mr. Chekhov, there are 3 class M planets.
Yes, sir.
Not one of which is capable of launching an interstellar flight.
No, sir.
Yet one of them accomplished it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chekhov.
Captain, I'm picking up high energy generation on planet 6.
It's the primitive glaciated planet.
Yes, sir.
The source, Lieutenant.
It could be natural. Volcanic activity, steam, any of a number of causes. But it's very regular.
What do your surface readings show, Mr. Chekhov?
No sign of organized civilization. Primitive humanoids picked up at irregular intervals.
With regular pulsations of generated energy?
I can't explain it, sir.
Kirk goes back to the con.
Can't afford to guess wrong. Better choose the right planet, get there, find the brain. 8 hours and 35 minutes. Recommendations, Mr. Chekhov?
Sigma Draconis 3. Its closest, heaviest population.
But a technological rating of only 3. They couldn't possibly have put that ship we saw into space.
None of these planets could.
Kirk looks at Sulu.
I say Planet 4, Captain. At least Planet 4 is ahead of 3, technologically.
But advanced ion propulsion is beyond even our capabilities. It'd be a miracle if they had developed it.
What would they want with his brain? What would they want with Mr. Spock's brain? What use is it? Why do they want it?
Yes, why would they want it? 8 hours and 34 minutes. Planet 6 is glaciated, you say?
For several thousand years, at least. Only the tropical zone is ice-free.
But the energy. Regular. It's there. It's real.
Yes, sir. It doesn't make sense, but it's there.
They all look at their captain.
Have the transporter room stand by. I'm taking a landing party down to Planet 6.
Aye, aye, sir.
A hunch, Captain.
A hunch, Mr. Sulu.
What if you guess wrong, Captain?
If I guess wrong, Mr. Spock is dead. Spock will die.
Captain's log, stardate 4351.5. We are beaming down to a primitive glaciated planet in the Sigma Draconis star system. Time left to us to find Spock's brain. 8 hours and 29 minutes.
Suit temperatures are 72.
The 5 strong landing party adjust the controls on their belts. Scotty takes readings on his tricorder.
Life form readings, Mr. Spock? Mr. Scott?
Scattered. Widely spaced. Humanoid, all right. On the large side.
A bearded native skulks nearby.
Watch out. We know the development is primitive.
Aye.
Kirk looks around the landscape of snow-capped boulders. The club-wielding native scuttles away.
Read out, Mr. Chekhov.
No structures, Captain. No mechanized objects that I can read. No surface consumption. No generation of energy.
The native meets with several others.
Atmosphere is perfectly all right, of course. Temperature, a high maximum of 40. Livable.
You have a thick skin.
Captain!
Kirk and Chekhov hurry over to Scotty.
There's someone, something out there in the rocks. 5 of them. Humanoid. Large.
Phases on stun. I want them conscious.
Kirk leads the party away through the labyrinth of rocks. Approaching from the opposite direction are a group of 5 natives. They wear furs, crudely stitched skins, and thick fur leggings. Some have brown hair, others are fair. But all wear their hair and beards long and unkempt. Their leader stoops down to pick up a rock.
Fire only on my signal.
The native leader beckons his party on.
Blackout.
Ahead is a field of snow-strewn boulders. Kirk, Chekhov, Scotty, and the 2 security guards spread out. The natives rear up from behind the boulders and send a shower of rocks at the landing party. The native leader charges. Kirk raises his phaser. The leader falls. His 4 companions drop their clubs and rocks and run. As Kirk runs up, the bearded man starts to come around.
You mean you know how?
We're not your enemies, we're your friends. We only wish to talk to you.
You are not the others?
No, we come from a far place. We are men.
Men?
Like yourselves.
You are small. Like the others.
Who are the others?
The givers of pain and delight.
Do they live here with you?
No. They come. They give pain and delight.
Do they come from the sky?
They are here. You will see. The others will come for you. They come for all like us.
Do they come for your women as well?
Women?
The female of your kind.
Your words say nothing.
Don't you have a mate?
Mate?
A companion.
The man's brown eyes stare at them uncomprehendingly. Kirk shrugs.
Will you take us where we can find the others?
No one wants to find them.
We do. We want to find them. Take us there and we'll let you go.
Captain, 500 meters in that direction, there's a foundation under the surface. A huge one. Registrations all over the place.
Buildings?
Yes, sir. Immensely old, completely buried, but they were here once.
Somewhere down there is where the others live. Scotty, see if you can find a way down.
Aye, sir.
No! No! No, you're not going there!
It's all right.
No! No!
It's all right, let him go!
What could the others do to cause such terror?
What was it he said? Pain and delight?
A peculiar mixture.
Dead and buried city on a planet in a glacial age.
And the male humanoid who doesn't know the meaning of the word female.
Captain!
Scotty has found a cave.
Over here, sir!
Kirk and Chekhov run up.
There's food in there and a whole pile of other stuff.
A storehouse for our muscular friends.
I don't think so.
There's a light beam just inside the entrance. Nearby are axes and baskets of bread.
Metal, forged, tempered. Our apish friends didn't make these. What do you think?
It could be a warning device to keep those creatures away from the food.
Or the food could be a lure set by the others to bring them in here.
In that case, the beam would be a signal.
And this cave, a trap.
If it will trap the creatures for the others, Captain, won't it trap us too?
Exactly. Kirk to Enterprise.
Enterprise, Uhura here.
Have Dr. McCoy beam down immediately.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Chekhov, you and the security team will remain here at the entrance. We'll be in constant contact with you.
Aye, sir.
Two figures begin to materialize. One is McCoy, the other is Spock. McCoy punches a small control pad in his hand. Spock slowly turns towards Kirk. He has a metal device strapped to his temples.
All right, Bones. Bring him along.
McCoy presses another button. Spock, dressed in dark overalls, begins to walk in a zombie-like fashion towards the cave. Chekhov and the two security guards watch uneasily and wait outside as Spock, Kirk, Scotty, and McCoy enter.
Keep him close to the right.
Inside, Kirk breaks the beam and a metal door slides down over the entrance.
Ready?
It's a lift.
Call Chekhov and tell him to send my stomach down.
Outside, Chekhov looks at the steel door.
It might be a long wait. We may as well be comfortable.
He aims his phaser at a boulder. Chekhov and the two guards warm their hands around the glowing rock in the cave lift.
Phasers on stun.
Captain, that power we picked up above, we're getting closer.
A lot of them?
Enough to push this planet out of orbit.
What source?
Either a nuclear pile 100 miles across, or...
what?
Ion power.
Kirk looks up as the sound of the elevator drops in tone.
We're slowing down.
They stare expectantly at the metal door. It rises. Beyond, a woman reaches for a button on her wristband. Kirk fires his phaser first and the woman drops to the floor. She's identically dressed to the female who materialized on the bridge, except that her clothes are gold. Kirk steps out of the lift into the corridor and kneels over her. He beckons to the others. Scotty joins him. McCoy operates Spock's neural stimulator, and they step out of the lift.
She all right? I'll have her talking in a minute.
Kirk drags her to her feet.
You do not belong here. You are not Moore.
Take me to the one in charge. I wish to speak to him.
Him? What is him?
What have you done with Spock's brain? Where have you taken it?
You are not Morg or I Morg. I know nothing about a brain.
You're lying. She's not, Jim. No change in reading. She doesn't know.
Kirk releases his fierce grip on the woman's shoulders and turns to Scotty.
See what you can pick up on your communicator.
Hi.
We don't want to hurt you. What is this place?
This place is here.
Who are you?
I am Luma. I am Imorg. You are not Imorg. You are not Morg. What are you?
Jim, it's no use. You'll get nothing out of that one. Hers is the mind of a child.
Captain, I've got something, but I can't quite get a fix on it.
Luma tries to run.
Fascinating. Activity without end, but with no volition.
Spock, is that you?
Captain. Captain Kirk.
Yes, Spock. Yes.
Captain, there is a definite pleasurable experience connected with the hearing of your voice.
Where are you, Spock?
Is that you, Dr. McCoy? And are you with the captain?
Where else would I be?
Mr. Spock, where are you?
Engineer Scott as well. Unfortunately, I do not know where I am.
We'll get you, Spock. It won't be long.
Practical idea, Captain. It seems unlikely that I shall be able to get to you.
Quickly.
They move off. As they turn a corner, they see the other woman with two male guards.
There she is. That's the one. What have you done with Spock's brain? What have you done?
The woman hits the button on her wristband and Kirk, Scotty and McCoy fall to the floor. Spock's body remains standing and seems to be staring at her. She looks back at it uneasily. The women feed their male guards.
Captain's log, stardate 5431.6. Immediately after making contact with Spock's brain, Dr. McCoy, Engineer Scott, and myself were taken prisoner inside a highly complex civilization hundreds of meters below the surface of planet Sigma Draconis 7. The primitive creature we encountered above warned us about the givers of pain and delight and the frightening consequences of being captured by them.
The woman who beamed aboard the Enterprise joins Luma and two other Imorg behind a desk. Kirk, Scotty and McCoy sit slumped in front of them, wearing metal belts similar to the two male morgues who stand guard behind them. The woman touches a button on her wrist device. The three Enterprise crewmen immediately wake, but Spock remains passive.
What are you? Why are you here? You have something to speak.
Kirk gets up, studying the device on his waist.
What have you done with Spock's brain?
We do not know Spock.
This is Spock. You saw him on the ship. You have his brain. It must be restored to him immediately. What have you done with it?
Ah, yes, brain. You spoke to Luma also of brain, but we do not understand.
I do not know about Luma, but you were on the Enterprise. I saw you.
We do not know these things you speak
of. You came to my ship!
We know only here below and here above. This is our place. You are not Morg. You are stranger.
I saw you on my ship.
Jim.
Kirk goes back to McCoy.
She may not remember, or even really know. Disassociation could be complete. Doesn't seem possible she could have performed surgery on Spock. No, it doesn't.
You hurt Luma. It is not permitted again to hurt anyone.
Sorry. We don't want to hurt anyone.
If you wish to return to your home, you may go.
No, we'll stay here and learn about you and tell you of us.
He looks at McCoy.
Yes, for instance, above it's cold and harsh, and below it's warm. The air is fresh.
Aye, there's no sun, but there's light.
The woman frowns.
I wish to talk to those in charge.
In charge?
Yes, the organizers, the managers. The leader of your people.
I am leader. There is no other.
That's impossible. Who built the machines?
Who are the doctors? Who operates? Who controls this complex?
Control. Controller?
Yes, the controller. The controller. Who controls? I would like to meet, to see him.
No, it is not permitted. Never. Controller is alone, apart. We serve Controller. No other is permitted near.
We intend no harm.
You have come to destroy us.
No, I promise you.
We just want to talk to somebody about Spock's brain, that's all.
Brain and brain, what is brain? It is Controller, is it not?
Yes, in a way it is. The human brain controls the individual's functions.
Boss. Scotty. Spock's brain controls.
Not possible.
Ah. Kirk raises his hands and drops to his knees in front of the woman.
Great leader, we come from a far place to learn from your controller.
You lie. You know me. You have said that. You came to take back the controller.
He is our friend. You must take us to him. We beg you. Soon it will be too late.
Do not take them, Carol. Do not take them to the controller. They will be prevented.
You must take us.
Kara touches her wristband. Kirk, Scotty, and McCoy double up in pain, clutching the devices on their belts.
I must learn what to do. Come with me. You'll keep them here.
Yes, mistress.
Kara, Luma, and the two other women, identically dressed apart from the color of their boots and dresses, leave along with two of the men, the morgue.
Ship's log. Lieutenant Sulu recording. I'm holding the Enterprise in orbit about planet Sigma Draconis 7. Captain Kirk's hunch that Spock's brain is on this planet appears to be correct. Ensign Chekov remains on the surface to act as liaison between the captain and the Enterprise.
Kirk, Scotty, and McCoy slowly come round. Scotty clutches at the metal belt around his waist.
Oh. I never felt anything like that. Every nerve on my body was on fire.
I wouldn't believe the human organism could take such pain.
These are on to stay for a while. Must be a magnetic lock of some kind.
No one of the morgues are so obedient. I'm terrified.
He goes to the door. A morgue guard blocks his way.
How is this place kept functioning by the primitive minds we've met?
Kirk sees their communicators and tricorders on a table. Another morgue blocks his path.
Now, those women could never have set up anything as complex as this has to be. Well, that takes engineering genius. But there's no sign of engineering genius in any of those women.
They were smart enough to invent these training devices. What a way to maintain control over a man.
Pain and delight, he set up above.
I'm sure you noticed the delight aspect of this place.
Yes, I certainly did notice those delightful aspects. But that, too, was strictly under command of the women.
How does Spock's brain fit into this?
With a communicator, we might be able to find out.
He goes towards the communicators again. One of the two morgues again blocks his path.
This fellow is keeping us from our property.
Well, isn't there a way to correct that situation?
I certainly think that science might provide an answer.
It does, Captain.
Agreed, Doctor.
Kirk slams his fist into the stomach of the nearest morgue. McCoy and Scotty take on the other one. Spock sits by impassively as the bigger, more powerful morgue throw them off. They return to the fight. And they win. Kirk helps McCoy up.
Science will triumph.
Come on, Scotty.
Bones, give them something that will keep them up for a while. Spock.
Come on, Spock. Spock, you are on this frequency, Spock.
Yes, Captain. I am still here. Have you returned to the Enterprise?
No. We might be able to locate you if you gave us some idea of what they were using you for. Is it medical?
I'm not certain. I seem to have a body which stretches into infinity.
Body? Wait, you have none.
Then what am I?
You are a disembodied brain.
Fascinating. It could explain much, Doctor. My medulla oblongata is hard at work, apparently breathing, apparently pumping blood, apparently maintaining a normal physiologic temperature.
Spock, we don't have time for that.
Why are you endangering your lives by coming here?
We came to put you back. Where are you?
Back where?
Back into your body. We brought it along with us.
Thoughtful, Captain. But probably impractical. While I might trust the doctor to remove a splinter or lance a boil, I do not believe he has the knowledge to restore a brain.
Thank you.
No denigration intended, Dr. McCoy. That skill does not yet exist in the galaxy.
The skill to remove it exists right where we are. Restoring it must also be possible. That's why we've got to get to you as quickly as we can.
Captain, I appreciate the risks you are taking in my behalf. But I must insist that they are worthwhile only if there is a reasonable chance for success. Let me ask you, how much time has elapsed
18
since...
18 hours and 12 minutes.
Dr. McCoy must have told you that 24 hours is the maximum my body can be...
I told them.
That leaves us exactly 5 hours and 48 minutes, Spock.
It does seem all too brief a time to develop such skills, does it not?
Yes. Very brief. That's why we must get to you immediately. Beam us a signal so we can home in on you.
Acknowledged.
Scotty takes a scan.
Got it.
Kirk indicates Spock. McCoy presses the hand control, and Spock slowly stands. Automaton-like, Spock moves towards the door. Scotty watches unhappily. The lozenge-shaped door opens, and they step into a corridor.
Look, Spock, one question.
Yes, Captain.
We've got pain-giving devices attached to us. Can you tell us how to get them off?
I shall give it top priority.
Scotty leads the way, scanning all the time with his tricorder. Kirk follows in touch with Spock's brain through his communicator.
Captain, I have an answer for you. It seems your pain bands are manually controlled. The red button on a bracelet releases them. I know that does not make much sense.
Oh, yes, it does, Spock.
He glances back at Spock's disconnected body, following them like a robot as McCoy manipulates the hand control. They turn a corner.
Keep concentrating, Spock. Keep concentrating, Spock.
Scotty arrives at a closed door and stops.
Must be in there, Captain.
They step inside. Kara perches by the master control where Spock's brain is imprisoned. She sees them and touches a button on her bracelet. McCoy falls to the ground, dropping Spock's control. Kirk and Scotty writhe in agony. Only Spock's body is unaffected.
Jim! Spock! No pain!
Kirk crawls along the floor, reaching out for the hand control that will activate Spock's body. He reaches it and, despite the pain, presses a button. Spock starts to move towards Kara.
No.
Kirk presses another button. Spock reaches for her wrist.
Go away!
He grasps the bracelet on her wrist and presses the red button. Their metal belts spring open. Spock holds Kara fast. Kirk gets up and looks around the controller's room.
We will die. You must not take the controller away. We will all die. The controller is young and powerful. Perfect.
How very flattering.
He will give life to my people for 10,000 years to come.
We'll find another controller.
The old one is finished. There is no other than this. And it will not
Spock, you're in a black box tied in with light rays into a complex control panel.
Fascinating.
You say you're breathing, pumping blood, maintaining temperature. Is it possible that you're recirculating air, running heating plants, purifying water?
Indeed, Captain, that is unquestionably part of what I am doing.
He must stay! He must stay!
He will not stay.
Kara breaks free from Spock. Kirk grabs her.
Now, you took his brain. You will put it back. How did you do it?
I do not know.
She couldn't, Jim. Her mind is functioning on a very simple level. Mental faculties down here seem to be almost atrophied because of non-use.
She was on the Enterprise. She must have done it. How did you do it?
It was the old knowledge.
How do you get the old knowledge?
I put upon my head the teacher.
What is a teacher?
The great teacher of all the ancient knowledge.
If I may explain, Captain, she refers to the taped storehouse of knowledge of the builders of this place. I scan it. A most impressive store.
Kirk spots a large, transparent helmet device studded with dozens of spiky neural probes and receivers resting on one of the control desks. He picks it up.
How does it work? Show us.
I cannot.
You must tell us.
I cannot. Only by command of the ancients may I understand.
How does it work? Show us. We'll protect you. You won't come to any harm.
It is a device with feeding circuits. They lead into the mind of the priestess leader. Its use is strictly predetermined by the builders.
No! No! The knowledge is forbidden! I must not know the secrets! Oh, my mind!
Implacably, Kirk holds Kara fast and lowers the helmet over her head. Lights and dials on the enormous, sophisticated banks of computers that line the walls begin to wink and flash. Kara's eyes close. Kara's eyes open again, and the helmet rises into the air above her head. She looks at Kirk and Scotty with calm authority.
Gentlemen, the controller's explanation of the functioning of the teacher is essentially correct. However, he is giving no credit to me. I provide the means whereby the knowledge is used. Without me, Captain.
Without you, there could be no delicate miracle that kept Spock's brain alive.
Thank you, Doctor. That was very gracious.
Yes, from the very first. I appreciated your ability.
Good, Captain Kirk. Then you will also appreciate that without the teacher, I would not have the knowledge to use that which you have thoughtfully provided.
She brings a phaser out from under her dress.
That phaser is set to kill.
So it is. That is the knowledge you have brought me.
Kara points the phaser at Kirk.
Do not move. If your weapon kills, it will kill you.
We're not the first to bring you the knowledge of killing. If you continue, you'll kill Spock.
The controller die. The controller will live for 10,000 years, and we shall give him all our devotion.
But Spock will be dead. His body is dying this minute.
Why do you not understand that the need of my people for their controller is greater than your need for your friend?
No one may kill a man. Not for any purpose. It cannot be condoned.
Do not. I do not know killing. I do not wish to kill.
Scotty feigns illness. As Kara glances at him, Kirk grabs back the phaser.
The commandment must be fulfilled.
You must help us. When you came to the ship, you had the knowledge. Yet, when we came here, you didn't.
Correct.
How long does the knowledge last?
3 of your hours.
There would be just enough time.
If you had the knowledge, could you restore what you've taken?
I would not.
You must help us. You must restore, with that knowledge, what you have taken.
No!
You must put back what you have taken!
I will not betray my people. The controller will stay.
She looks at Kirk imperiously. He holds her gaze for a long moment, then nods and steps away, his eyes darting to and fro as he looks for a way forward. He goes over to McCoy, who's standing beside Spock's body.
Jim, it worked for her. It might work for me.
She is an alien. The configurations of her brain are different. It could cause irreparable damage to your human brain, Doctor.
I'm a surgeon already. If I could learn these techniques, I might be able to retain them.
Captain, you might lose the doctor that way.
He might, but we're sure to lose you if I don't try.
I cannot allow you to jeopardize your life for me.
Spock, didn't you hear? I might be able to retain and bring these techniques to the world. Jim, isn't it worth that risk? Wouldn't you insist upon taking such a risk yourself?
Kirk nods.
Go ahead, Doctor. Put the teacher on.
McCoy goes towards the helmet.
No!
Scotty pulls Kara away. McCoy stands beneath the transparent dome with its dozens of unfathomable probes and transmitters. Kirk lowers it down over his head. The lights on the computer banks flash. McCoy screws his eyes shut. McCoy puts his hands to his face and drops to his knees. Kirk kneels beside him. McCoy opens his eyes wide.
Of course. Of course. A child could do it. A child could do it.
Kirk and McCoy look up at Spock's impassive body. Later, Spock lies on an operating table, the top of his head sticking through a screen as McCoy operates.
Captain's log, stardate 5432.3. Dr. McCoy is proceeding to restore Spock's brain. Our problem? We do not know how long his increased surgical knowledge will stay with him. Any additional attempt to use the teaching device is impossible. It would kill my medical officer.
Never seen anything like it. He's operating at warp speed. You know, I'd like a try at that teacher myself.
You will have him back and we will be destroyed.
No, you won't be destroyed. You'll be without your controller for the first time. But you'll be much better off, I think.
We will die.
No, you'll live and develop as you should have. All this shouldn't have been done for you. Now the women here below and the men here above will control together.
They will not help us without the pain.
There are other ways. You'll discover them. You must move to the surface, you understand.
We will die above in the cold.
No, you won't. You'll learn to build houses, to keep warm, to work. We'll help you for a while. Humans have survived under worse conditions. It's a matter of evolution. You'll be fine.
Captain Kirk.
McCoy falters.
What is it?
He's forgetting.
Bones. Bones?
All the ganglia, the nerves, there are a million of them. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do?
Bones, you can't stop now.
I'm trying to thread a needle with a sledgehammer. What am I supposed to do? I can't remember. I don't remember. Bones, no one can restore a brain.
You could. A while ago, it was child's play.
McCoy stares down at Spock's body. Eyebrows arched in panic, eyes wide. He returns to work.
Captain's log, supplemental. Our race against time to save Spock's life may have been futile. Dr. McCoy has lost the surgical knowledge he obtained from the teacher. He has been drawing on his own skills in surgical techniques in an attempt to continue the operation, but he is faltering and uncertain. In a desperate hope that he can draw on Spock's brain for assistance, I instructed Dr. McCoy to give priority to connecting Spock's vocal cords.
Scotty and Kirk watch McCoy anxiously. He looks up in terror.
Well?
He's dying and I can't stop it.
Yes. Dr. McCoy.
Spock.
If you will finish reconnecting my speech center, I might be able to help.
Speech center.
Yes. That's correct. One thing at a time. That's better. Now, Doctor, try the sonic separator.
Sonic separator?
Yes, I believe I already have some sensation of feeling. Please stimulate the nerve endings and observe the physical reactions one by one. In each case, I shall tell you when the probe is correct. You will then seal using the tri-laser connector.
Tri-laser connector.
McCoy picks up a tool and looks down at Spock.
Ready?
Ready.
Right forefinger?
It twitches.
Correct.
Right wrist?
Correct.
Right elbow?
The arm moves.
Correct. Very good, Doctor.
I'll never live this down. This Vulcan is telling me how to operate.
Scotty and Kirk suppress knowing smiles. Time passes. Kirk, Scotty, and Kara watch as McCoy seals the incisions.
Closed. Well, what I know, I could have made 1,000 mistakes. Sealing nerve endings. Joining ganglia. The fluid balance is correct, but I don't know.
Spock sits up, his face full of curiosity. He gives his limbs an exploratory stretch.
Congratulations, Doctor. And thank you.
How do you feel, Spock?
On the whole, Captain, I believe I'm quite fit.
This is fascinating.
A remarkable example of a retrograde civilization, at the peak, advanced beyond any of our capabilities, and now operating at this primitive level, which you saw. And it all began thousands of years ago, when a glacial age reoccurred. You see, this underground complex was developed for the women. The men remained above, and a male-female schism took place. A fascinating cultural development of a kind
I
which
knew
has...
it was wrong. I shouldn't have done it.
What's that?
I should have never reconnected his mouth.
Spock looks at him indignantly.
Well, we took the risk, Doctor.
As I was saying, a fascinating cultural development of a kind which hasn't been seen in ages. The last such occurrence took place on old Earth when the Romans were warring with the Greeks.
This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.